You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hello, friends, and welcome to this edition of the Thirsty Dogs Drink Pod. Let's just start that one all over again.
Let's let it run.
That's fitting. That's fitting.
Great. I think we just let it run.
No, I got to start that over. Three, two. Hello, friends, and welcome to the Thirsty Dogs Drink Faster podcast on the SB Nation Podcast Network. I am Paul Hudrick, and I am joined by Seamus Glancy. We shouldn't be laughing because we're both. Are we laughing to avoid crying? Is that what's happening right now?
Classic defense mechanism.
Yes. We know nothing about those types of things. but your Philadelphia Eagles finally lose a football game. We'll get into that. I didn't see it coming this week. I'm not sure you saw it coming at all, Seamus. Then we're going to, of course, touch on Joel Embiid and a monster performance on Sunday night. I was in the building for that incredible atmosphere. We're going to touch plenty on that in the Sixers moving forward. The Flyers, a brutal week and last few days for them and for their head coach in particular. We'll get on that. Philly's not a whole lot of stuff, but there is some buzz floating free agent wise and a minor move they made as well. So we're going to get into all that too, but we got to talk Eagles first. They lose to the Washington Commanders. Pretty flat loss. There were moments in the second half where I certainly felt like, all right, here we go. They're going to right the ship. This is it. And then they, you know, either stepped on their own foot or they got hosed by some pretty horrendous officiating down the stretch. Now to me, I'm a type of guy like, you can't blame officiating for losing, especially when you let a team that hadn't scored more than 17 points the last 2 weeks score 20 on you in the first half. You then don't get to gripe about officiating late in the game, especially when you're as good as the Eagles are. That's how I feel about it. I want to start with, for me, I didn't think they were going to go undefeated. I felt like they were going to lose a game. On top of that, I felt like it was going to be a division game they were going to lose. I thought, you know, a split with the Giants made sense.
Yeah, losing, I think we said Dallas, like losing the Giants in the Meadowlands felt like the first loss to me.
That or losing to the Cowboys, that seemed very legitimate as well in Dallas with Dak back, all that. I did not see their first loss coming at home against the Washington Commanders against a guy named Henneke. Did not see any of that coming. I know you thought that there was a good chance that they could maybe not run the or at least you thought if they were going to lose, it was almost of their own volition, like they were going to win all their games and then rest guys. So I
could have foreseen them going 14 or 15 and 0 and then playing each the starters a half and then a quarter respectively in the final 2 weeks of the season.
And here we are.
And everyone, the town's on fire now in the worst possible way. It was terrible. I was there, and it was one of those things where you think they're eventually going to pull it out, and you're waiting and waiting for that shoe to drop, and then you have this turnover and you have that turn in, and you're thinking, holy, this isn't happening. And on Philly Voice every week, I write an article of three pivotal plays that determine the game, and in my head, it's become three pivotal plays in the Eagles' wins, because since I've been with the company, I've only covered wins. And it was a situation where still 5-6 minutes left in the fourth quarter, I haven't fully written the article yet because I'm just thinking, they're probably going to pull this out, right? I'm not going to waste my time pre-writing this Commanders win when we know they're going to pull it out. And then once the Goddard no face mask thing that just, again, different with the relationship of the team, but poor officiating is poor officiating to me. And just made my blood absolutely boil that. And it's a safety issue too, because now he's hurt.
Right.
Got his head ripped off, and then another guy jumped on him as his head was getting ripped off, punched the ball loose. Now he's going to be out probably like a month. How do these people have jobs? I'm not perfect at my job, nor is anyone, but seems more likely than not that they're absolutely disgusting and terrible about their jobs. And it's an epidemic running throughout professional and collegiate sports.
Well, especially the NFL. That's what bothers me the most because they don't have full-time officials, right?
Correct.
And you are the richest league in professional sports. Why don't you have full-time people officiating games, you cheap asses? Like, what? Like, train full-time people to do this job. Don't hire a bunch of accountants to also rep on the side. Like, this isn't Pee-wee. Like, this isn't Little League. What are we doing? And yeah, and then obviously the C.J. Gardner-Johnson play, you call that, but then you miss the Goddard face mask. Like, how does that happen? And when you're the official and you're looking
He was right there. He was right there.
Looking to see whether he fumbled. How do you miss the guy getting his face mask and ripping? And it wasn't like, like someone said on Twitter, this was an old school 15-yarder. Like, now they're all 15-yarders. But in old school, you remember, it was either a 5-yarder for unintentional if you let go of the face mask, or 15 if you really yanked the guy down. That was an old school 15-yarder. That was a blatant, malicious face mask. And for it not to go, and then, like you said, just the insult literally to injury that Goddard is also hurt. Like, and Goddard's been playing, like, as we've talked about many times, he's playing like one of the, if not the best tight end in football right now. So to lose him at this juncture of the season, thank goodness it's not season ending and they should get him back for the playoffs. And, you know, hopefully he gets a couple games to, you know, get a little tune up before that. But he's been so crucial to this offense, and he's such an all around good player, right? Like, he's not just a guy who catches a bunch of passes. He's a great blocker. He's been in the system for years, so he knows the offense and just is such a key cog. So it's such a huge loss. And, you know, you're talking about the momentum plays, the Quez Watkins fumble. I mean, because to me, that felt like it, right? Like when Watkins catches
He shouldn't even have to fall. It hit him in stride. Yeah, that should have been a beautiful throw into the end zone. Jalen Hurts had two unbelievable 50-yard-plus throws that went at least at minimum in the hands of their wide receivers, and neither resulted in the Eagles having the ball after that play. A.J. Brown, deep ball, in the double coverage, and you're thinking, well, maybe you shouldn't throw it to a guy that's covering. You get A.J. Brown so you could have those 50-50 balls downfield. That's what he does. And this season, it's been more so like 80-20 balls with him.
Yeah.
So how could you not have confidence in doing that? And you want to criticize Hurts for doing that? And it seemed like in the immediate aftermath, that's what was happening online. But once you saw the ball, it's literally in A.J. Brown's hands that quelled down. But then the Hurts lines up, zips that ball downfield. The question, like, oh, my God, Jalen just led this comeback. It's happening. And then Quez goes down. He's like, oh, he's going to pop up, back up, get another 10 yards, maybe even get in the end zone. And then that ball squirts out, and then you see Devontae Smith coming out of nowhere. I'm like, is Devontae going to recover? Are they going to be at the 10? And I couldn't believe what I was watching unfold. And it felt like the type of loss that, given the start of the season, the last few months, it feels like a relic of a different era, right? It feels like a 2018-2019 loss when expectations are high for the team and they have these crushing defeats. And yes, it's different losing and going 5-7 like they might have in 2018 after, you know, losing some games then, as opposed to going down 8-1. I'm sure, like I wrote in my for Philly Voice, before the season, every Eagles fan would have taken 8-1 if it was offered to them, but they certainly wouldn't have wanted that one in the loss column to be like that.
Right. And that's what it is for me. Like, this is still, I think, a very good football team. A really good, perhaps.
Still expecting to make the Super Bowl. I'm still expecting to make the Super Bowl.
If line it up against the Minnesota Vikings right now, I still take the Eagles right now. I absolutely do. Watching the Buffalo Bills the past couple of weeks, I would feel better about that matchup too. The Eagles still, to me, are the most complete team in the NFL, and that was mentioned on the broadcast several times. What was hard to watch last night is, I believe the Commanders came in 28th ranked rushing attack, and for the second week in a row, the Eagles just get gouged in the running game. And it's funny because I can stomach it with the Texans, right? Because they've done a pretty good job running the football. Pierce has had a hell of a season. For a team like the Commanders, who's had, you know, offensive linemen shuffling in and out, they do have some good players. They have Turner, they have Norwell, they have some pretty good players on the offensive line. But just to see them get gashed over and over again. And I did see one thing. Someone pointed out that if you look at the PFF rankings, which, you know, take them or leave them, they're there. But
they're,
you know,
good when they say the Eagles are good. They're bad when they say the Eagles are bad.
And they can be a barometer of things at times. When you look at, you know, Jordan Davis and Javon Hargrave were like top 15 defensive tackles in the NFL. And now Fletcher Cox, and I'm not even going to try to say his name because I'm going to flip it up. The kid they got from USC a couple years ago, him and Fletcher Cox are literally in the bottom third of the NFL right now.
Fletcher Cox is terrible right now. He's not having a good because year. He's a guy who is a Super Bowl hero, multiple time All Pro, will be in the Eagles, you know, Hall of Fame eventually.
91 might get retired someday. That might happen.
But Howie Roseman cutting him and then giving him $14 million deal in an offseason where Howie seemed to be batting 1,000, that might be the lone blemish. And certainly you'll take what he's given this offseason. He's done a masterful job in reconstructing this roster. But it is sort of like the last vestige that the organization is tied to that Super Bowl run and that era that's gone by, whether it's Chip or even Andy and Doug, is this Fletcher Cox, aura that's there. And they can no longer consider him the Fletcher Cox of 2017, 2018. He hasn't been that guy really, I think, since maybe like 2019, has been on a precipice downturn. And he's had some good games to start the season, but he is not the run defender he was when he was young. And it's pretty abundantly clear. And can we get Jordan Davis some defensive rookie of the year votes by kind of a mission the way in 2011, the Indianapolis Colts go 1-15 because Peyton Manning misses the season with neck surgery. Peyton Manning should have won MVP that year because it showcased that this team was absolutely nothing without him for so long. It only speaks to the talent of Jordan Davis. And it's funny now, because everyone was saying, not just during the pre-draft process of the season, like, oh, Jordan Davis isn't out there on passing down enough. He's just stopping the run. He's just doing this. I'm like, well, it would have been really nice for the Birds, I think, if he was out there stuffing the run the last 2 weeks, because Thursday Night Football would have been a breeze, and then they would have won against Washington. So I think Jordan Davis does just fine. He was coming along and getting in some of those four-man fronts rather than those five-man fronts as a pass rusher. And now that progress has been like stymied a bit, and he's not on the true developmental curve that Eagles fans or media would have thought or hoped he would be right now. And it absolutely sucks for them. It sucks for Jordan Davis.
And I think with Fletcher Cox now, to me, and I'm with you, he has not been, and I've loved Fletcher Cox. He's been one of my favorite players here, but he's not the same guy. And with Davis out, I think it's an overuse issue. I think he is just playing too many snaps. I think he could be effective. Like you mentioned earlier in the season, I thought he looked pretty good. And I think that's because the way Gannon was able to use him. He was able to use him in advantageous situations and
give him less snaps.
Exactly. When he needed a blow, he could come out. And now that hasn't been the case. So it's a little bit, not a little bit. It's a pretty big concern. I mean, listen, Jordan Davis isn't out for the season, right? I mean, he'll be back, I think, just in time for them to play the Titans. I believe he's eligible to come off IR, which is, that's
Derrick Henry's going to put up 250 on the ground. Good Lord.
If Jordan Davis isn't back, that would not be great. They're going to have to play Indy without him, which isn't very reassuring with that Jonathan Taylor fella in the backfield. Were you at all a little bit, though, surprised? And I don't want to go, and again, and I think we've done a good job of not doing this every time the defense has struggled, not go full on fire Jonathan Gannon. But it did feel like they played off coverage a lot. They didn't really show Heineke much in the way of blitzes or anything kind of funky here and there, but just not to me. I think maybe he could. When you have a quarterback like that who is a backup, who's inexperienced, and quite frankly is just not very good, doesn't it behoove you to maybe show him some different stuff, maybe throw him a blitz and maybe just confuse him a little bit, mix him up, and just throw off his timing? I thought maybe we could have seen a little bit more of that. I know, McLaurin's awesome. He's, I think, because of where he plays and because of who his quarterbacks have been, he's been underrated because he just hasn't had the guys to get him the football. But don't you think, one, they could have played, and it wasn't the whole game, but it felt like a lot of the game, the coverage was soft. And then also, again, I just thought they could have thrown a little bit more pressure on him, a little bit less four-man fronts throughout the game.
I feel like Jonathan Gannon's defense is designed to do that. It's based on eliminating big plays. So those little runs then adds up in these 7-8 yard completions. That's almost what he wants, is to kind of take what allow the offense to take what they can get. And sometimes it works when the pass rush is there and the coverage is tight, and it's a trickle down effect with Avante Maddox's entry. And the trade deadline happened like 2 weeks too early for them with all the injuries they're facing right now. It's rough.
Could have got a tight end, could have got a tackle.
Robert Quinn, absolute Casper ghost out there the last 3 weeks. And I don't know. I would have blitzed him more. An inexperienced, well, he's had, that was his 20th career start, so he's not totally inexperienced. Sure. But guys who aren't established veterans, who aren't established as good players, frankly, just to be, say, flat out, putting additional pressure on him, especially because he's a turnover machine going into, he's started 20 games, he's thrown an interception in 16 of them, and had five multi-interception games.
The interception he threw that was bad.
And once you see that, how do you not put more pressure on him to make him increasingly erratic? You let him just ding, 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 Terry McLaurin, Terry McLaurin, Terry McLaurin. Also, Terry McLaurin was taken roughly 18 picks after the Eagles drafted J.J. Arcega-Whiteside in 2019, in case you need some more salt in the wounds.
Well, that's when people talk about how good of a offseason Howie Roseman had, and he did. All the credit in the world, but we also do have to acknowledge that he does have to, like, he's cleaning up his own mess, right? Like, he's not cleaning up someone else's mess. He's cleaning up his own. When you have to trade for AJ Brown, and don't get me wrong, I'm delighted AJ Brown is here, but when you have to trade, and when you have to trade up to get a Devontae Smith and perhaps pass on a guy named Micah Parsons, who went a couple picks later, because you've horrendously missed on your first and second round picks at the wide receiver position, when you could have had DK Metcalf and McLaurin or what, you know, name, or Justin Jefferson, like, name the guy, whatever. So yeah, I mean, cleaning up his own mess. Not, and I don't want to get too negative. I feel like we're steering, like, perhaps a bit too negative. And I get, listen,
we're steering both towards the bridge.
Yeah, we really are. And I can just hear it. I can hear it in your voice. I heard it in your voice as soon as even before the podcast started, I could just hear it.
Mix of the Eagles loss, so the city's deflated, and like real seasonal depression winners here hours. It's really a rough mix right now.
Right, like, dude, I hate this shit. Like, I look, it looks so gray and true. Like, it feels like winter. This sucks.
Fucking 3 o'clock and it's gray outside.
I know, this sucks. I'm with you. And I'm having to bundle my son up and everything, and I'm like, damn, man, like, this sucks. But anyway,
last night I had planned all day. The other day I bought a 6-pack of Mad Elf.
Oh, okay.
So all day, like, you know, I'm gonna come over for the game, get done work, and it's gonna be like 1:30 in the morning. I'm gonna have a Mad Elf, and it's gonna be like really relaxing after the game. Last I got home, I was like, I just want to go to sleep. I just want to, like, I get up, do work tomorrow, do my job, do things I need to do in terms of covering and this team and being an editor and all this shit. And I was like, I'm just going to bed. It ruined that, like, little moment, like that Zach Lowe one beer challenge energy. I wanted my one post Sunday night, or Monday night, I should say, beer, but I did not get it.
You say that, and I had a similar situation. Clear, like, I don't cover the Eagles, so I get to just enjoy them from the comfort of my home. We had Miles' first birthday party over the weekend, and
happy birthday, Miles.
Yeah, well, it's a little early. You got this 10 days, 25th. We threw it early so it doesn't get too close to Thanksgiving and the like. But anyway,
was he born on Thanksgiving?
Yes, he was.
Oh, that's awesome.
Born on
I mean, it's like cool. I mean,
yeah, it's cool. No,
you might
cool.
hate
it's
it.
It's a cool story.
Yeah.
It was a cool story. I just hated that I missed out on food. My mom was very sweet and saved my fiance and I a nice big plate, so we got to eat the next day. When we brought him home from the hospital a couple days later. So
When he's in his early 20s, he'll love his birthday being on Thanksgiving Eve and stuff like that.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. there's cool stuff to it. But anyway, I had a lot of beer left over from said party. So I had one crappy beer, and then I had a bunch
What Coors Light?
So we had Coors Light and Mick Ultra. I had a Mick Ultra with my dinner. And then we had a bunch of, I also got Fuego from Tonewood, their flagship IPA. I got that just to have that in the mix. So I had some of that left over too. So I'm like, all right, I'm saving that for the game. I had one, and then like by halftime I was done drinking that, and I'm like, I don't want another one, because I was just so like annoyed by watching the game. I didn't even want another beer.
I was more of a fan and drinking during games before I was like obviously covering them in person and like an actual media member. If I was watching at home and they were starting to do poorly, I would stop drinking. And maybe it's the inverse for some people, like, oh, I'm pissed, I want to like clog some cans. I'm like, I need to literally stop drinking, recenter myself, calm the frig down, and realize I'm going to have another 9 hours the rest of my day after this to like have to act like a normal human being. So I got to chill the fuck out.
It's gross.
Yeah. I mean, I was doing that. Like, I would start doing that, like, you know, 20, 21, 22. And then, you know, and then the worst is if they're, you know, it's late, you're pounding, and then they lose at the last second, or and it's like, oh my god, this is the worst feeling.
You're, and it just does. It feels like, and it's the first time I have felt this all season, where like I watch the game and it's like 11 o'clock at night, and I'm like, I feel like I wasted 3 hours of my life. You know what I mean? Like you didn't. You know what I mean? Like you watch it, but it just feels that way like immediately after, because you're so pissed off that they lost, and I don't even want to drink any more beer, and my son's in bed, and it's you start thinking like, you know, he's probably gonna wake up in the middle of the night and blah blah blah, and then you just start all the things
catastrophizing.
Yes. And I gotta wake up early and finish the story I didn't finish writing. I could have done that for the last 3 hours instead of doing this, and like stuff like that. But anyway, for this rosy edition of the Thirsty Dog Shrink Faster podcast, I do want to touch on a rosy thing, and we're gonna take a quick break, but we're definitely gonna touch on Joel Embiid. Masterful, wonderful performance on Sunday night against the Utah Jazz. We're going to touch a little on Flyers, a little bit on Phillies, but we are going to take a quick break right now. More on the Thirsty Dogs Drink Faster podcast right after this.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries.
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on, and there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
And we're back, and we have to talk about Joel Embiid. We got to bring the spirits up like a little bit, right? Hell of a night. Pretty good.
Can I reveal something? I wish I didn't have to. Did not. I missed the game. I had watched hundreds of terrible Sixers games in my life.
And you just made me knock over my Batman poster. That's how much you upset me with it.
I rarely get an NFL Sunday off, and I did this week because the Eagles weren't playing. So I went to my buddy's house, did like a little red zone Sunday. You know, was watching that, came home, it was 8 o'clock or so, you know, watched an hour of TV with my fiance, and then went to bed early. And then I wake up, I'm like, are you effing kidding me? All the games I've suffered through during my time as a fan, and I had one chance to watch this guy almost a 60-point quadruple double. And I only heard about it hours later.
Hopefully you read all about it at libertyballers.com.
I read everything I could about it. It was It was amazing. I'm happy for the. It's one of those things where you're just kind of happy that it happened and it exists for like the city and the fan base
in perpetuity. It is there. You cannot take away Joel Embiid putting up 59 points, 11 rebounds, 8 assists, 7 blocks.
We call that a Wednesday for Will Chamberlain.
I got to say this. I hate, because I know you and I talk about gatekeeping and all that stuff all the time and how annoying that is when someone, no one has ever accomplished that stat line, right? Like no one's ever done 59, 11, 8, and 7 blocks. No one's ever done that. Will Everyone has. That has to do the whole, well, blocks weren't a stat till 72, 74. So Will Chamberlain did this like 10 times. Okay. We all get it. So Joel Embiid and Wilt Chamberlain are the only people to do it. That does not take away from how spectacular it was. Like, what do we? It bothers me to no end. Like, we all get it. Okay. Like, you don't have to be that guy. Anyway,
I used to not be like the biggest Wilt guy because I was more like just like a nerd. Like, oh, he played against garbage men and shit like that. And I swung the other way and I was like, this guy's like the greatest Philadelphia basketball player ever from high school to the pros.
Yeah.
And he's doing shit. Like he changed the complexion of the game.
They literally
changed rules, changed how the game was played and just puts up stats that don't exist now. I mean, he's basketball Babe Ruth.
Yeah.
And he
it's like he's fake. It is like he's not real in a lot of ways. He's mythological.
He's gonna be a top 6-7 player ever to me, but also like I kind of like having the troll he's the GOAT thing too.
Yeah, you and I have discussed this. I think it was off podcast we discussed this, but I hate that shit. I hate the GOAT conversations.
I hate it. It's fun.
It's so eras. Fun. Wilt Chamberlain was the greatest Wilt Chamberlain and Bill Russell, greatest players of their era. Cool. Michael Jordan, greatest player of his era. LeBron James, greatest of his. Done. I'm good. Don't need to go any more into that.
John Moran, greatest player of his era, too.
Okay. Maybe. That could happen. He's only 23.
There was a nice article on SportsIllustrated.com today that I read. Thought of it because of the Grizzlies connection on what went wrong for the Grizzlies and Vancouver. If you're a basketball history buff to a degree, I would consider myself one. Definitely worth checking out on there. It was nice and... if you're like a basketball hipster, it's nice to have that stuff. I'm sure I'm not the only person who's owned some Vancouver Grizzlies merchandise in my life. But it was cool.
Well, kudos to the Grizzlies for bringing back more of that color. I didn't know what is that is it greenish bluish? Like how would you describe that color?
I mean, imperfectly it's teal, but it's not teal.
Yeah.
It'd be like
it's beautiful.
Somewhere between teal and forest green. It just the color screams Pacific Northwest.
Yes. That's literally the only thing they got right.
Yeah. The uniform. That
and they drafted Sharif Abdur-Rahim, who was one of my favorite basketball players of all time. But
big
yeah,
country.
Big country. That was a terrible pick because he was not very good. I remember when it was them and the Raptors coming in at the same time. It was good times. Shit like that makes me feel so old. Like literally I remember playing like NBA Live on Nintendo. It might have been Super Nintendo at that point. I guess it had to be, right? Super Nintendo playing NBA Live and like, oh, cool. We get to play with these two new teams. This is fun. And now that makes me feel depressingly old. Anyway.
Miles will be mind blown. There was a team that existed called the Charlotte Bobcats and they were named the Bobcats because their owner's name was Bob and that's why he named the team as such.
Yes. Oh, man. And the Hornets, how they were in Charlotte. Then they were in New Orleans for some reason. And then
I like that they took the history back. I think that should happen. I wish it won't happen with the Grizzlies because they're so just entwined with that city now. But I wish if the NBA got on like another team in Vancouver, they could take it back. I think Seattle doesn't have the rights to the Sonics. I don't know if they do or not. I don't know either.
But that needs to happen. They just need to bring the Sonics back to another team that in my youth.
You got an NHL Kemp. Team in Seattle before an NBA team.
I know. Sad. Sean Kemp was like before Allen Iverson. Sean Kemp was my favorite player. I love Sean Kemp, the Rain Man.
Dude was Blake.
Yeah, I mean he was. I mean I think he was
not as good of a passer, but maybe
more,
a better
I would say he's more and he's more skilled than Blake. Like skilled as far as like he could actually take dudes off the dribble and like, I mean and you know he had a mid range shot. He never because guys didn't shoot threes. Like guys who were 6'10" were told never to shoot threes ever. So he probably could have done it if they had done it, if that was a thing. But yeah, 6'10" and doing like windmill dunks. Like, it was just not a thing that happened. He was incredible. But anyway, Joel Embiid, and being there, it was so wild.
What was the atmosphere in the crowd? Painted for me.
Well, what's funny is early on, it was kind of just like Sunday night against Utah. And I think we all, like, the media felt that way. Like, I think we all felt that, like, covering the game. I think the crowd even sort of felt like that. Like, the loudest was when they showed the Packers. They showed Mason Crosby kicking the field goal to beat Dallas. That was the loudest the arena was until, like, the fourth quarter, like, legitimately. Because that's just the way it felt. Like, and they were down. They were down most of the game. They were down at halftime, and they didn't really – they were just, like, meh. I mean, Embiid was – it was so typical when Harden's out and it's just, like, Embiid, and it's cool. Joel Embiid has, you know, whatever he had, 24 points at halftime, and no one else is doing anything. Like, okay, this happens pretty often. It's formulaic. We're used to it. But it was when, so to me, for me, when I started feeling like, okay, this isn't normal, like something is happening here, was when the third quarter ended. He had 33-8-8. That's preposterous through three quarters. And so, like, someone, like, commented on it, said, like, oh, but this is, like, what he does. I'm like, dude, he's got a chance to put up a 50-point triple-double. That's not normal. Little did I know, he almost put up a 60-point quadruple-double, but... and I just remember, you know, the people, like, we're all in press row, and it got to a point during the fourth quarter. He blocked, I think, 5 of his 7 shots in the fourth. It got to a point where we were laughing because either he was blocking the shot or challenged. Like, he challenged every shot Utah took at the rim. He was there, whether they made it or not, or whether he deterred it. Like, he was there for every shot they took at the rim. I feel like all their baskets came on offensive rebounds after they missed shots and be contested. Like,
yeah,
it was wild to watch. Like, just a guy just destroy the game. Like, he destroyed their offense, and then he comes down the other end, and it's just making everything. And what made it very Sixers, too, is how comically poorly everyone else shot to end the game. Like, Tobias Harris blew 2 bunnies. Then there was one possession. Embiid came out for 2 minutes in the fourth quarter. I don't even know if it was all 2 minutes. It might have been like a minute and however many seconds. Embiid comes out. They have this possession. They work the ball around. They get a pretty good shot. It rims off. They get an offensive rebound. Goes out to Tobias Harris. Corner 3. Wide open. Out. Get another offensive rebound. Tyrese Maxey on the wing. Wide open 3. Miss. And it was like, literally, he has to play the entire rest of the game or they're not going to win. Because it was just that. That's where we were, and it just, yeah. I mean, you definitely, once, like, in the fourth quarter, you felt it. Like, and the arena felt it. Like, it was just the energy was wild for the fourth quarter. And it's just such a cool vibe post game too, to be around that. You know, Doc Rivers talking, like, for a guy like Doc Rivers who has been around forever, to say he's never seen a more dominant two-way performance in his life speaks volumes. And I don't think he's saying that hyperbolic. I think he meant it. And, you know, Tyrese Maxey comes out and says, if you guys ask me a question about anything other than Joel Embiid, I'm not going to answer. And just, like, little stuff like that. And, you know, the post-game, you know, Embiid in the locker room was just, like, it's just the vibes were so good. And for a team that the vibes have not been that good to start the season, and
not a team historically good on vibes. Historically.
Yes, historically not good on vibes. True. But to me, this felt like, and now they have 4 days off because of a weird schedule quirk. This felt like the kind of game that it's almost like, okay, like, this is like, let's regroup. We got this out of Joe, this wonderful performance. We've won a couple, you know, we've won 3 out of 4. We've won 2 in a row. We're feeling pretty good. Let's fix all the things that are going wrong and let's use this time and then play the Milwaukee Bucks on Friday. Like, I'm going to say this and then I'm going to get killed when they lose like 5 straight games, but it just felt like this had the potential to be a turning point for the season.
Okay.
So for me, at least it feels like, and they've been playing much better defense, which is in no small part because Joel Embiid has been sensational on that end of the floor, but in general, they've been much better as a team. I could be mistaken, but I think they actually are the highest rated defensive team since Joel Embiid came back against Phoenix and they won. I thought it was hilarious too, where Joel Embiid said on Monday night, he said, "Oh no, the season actually did start tonight because the Phillies are eliminated, and now the season started tonight." And they're 3-1 since then. So
good, some self awareness from the big fella.
Yeah, the 3-1 Sixers. That's where we are, Seamus. 3-1.
Both the Sixers and the Eagles only have one loss this year.
There you go. There we go. Great vibes. Great stuff. Phils. Phils. Yeah. Speaking of vibes that were good for a very long time. How are you feeling now? Now that we're like a couple weeks removed.
So Sunday I had mentioned I had some beverages, you know, all day, and then went to bed early. Some weird dreams, which I don't think is uncommon for people when they maybe drink some beer and stuff like that. Had two different dreams that I was at the parade.
Ugh, that hurts.
It's rough. Like just in South Philly, like
yeah,
fragments of people like I knew in my life growing up and decked out in Philly's gear. Two different times I fell into it. Like you dream it and then you wake up for 30 seconds and you go right back into it.
I wasn't there.
I don't know, man. You might have been at Torchwood.
Torchwood?
Yeah. That's the name of the brewery, right?
Tonewood.
Tonewood.
Close. That's no, that hurts. That hurts. But the Phillies, you know, plenty of buzz swirling around about, you know, Trey Turner's obviously the hot name and seems quite feasible that there's a lot of easy dots to connect there as far as the Phillies could use a guy to play at shortstop, move Bryson Stott over to second base. The connection to Bryce Harper, obvious, their time in Washington, they became very good friends. They're very close to this day. The Phillies are going to have some money off their books. They have money to burn. John Middleton proved last offseason he's not afraid to use that money. Then the other thing I saw too, John Heyman linked them to Xander Bogaerts from the Red Sox.
I saw that.
Citing Dombrowski's days. You know, I don't know the exact connection. I don't know if Dombrowski was actually a part of the off front office that drafted him
he was there when they won.
Certainly there when they won, and he was a big part of that. But I have a buddy who's very in on Trey Turner, like desperately wants Trey Turner, but he has conceded that if they get Correa, if they get Bogaerts, if they get Dansby Swanson, he will be very okay with any of those consolation prizes. I guess for you, are you a Trey Turner? I think we talked about this, and I don't think you are, but are you a Trey Turner or bus guy? Will you be like, what's the perfect offseason? Like, what happens to you where you're like, this is the Howie Roseman offseason. Dombrowski nailed it. It's perfect. Let's go win a World Series.
I'd rather use the free agent money on the pitching rotation, though I think they are more likely to swing a trade for a starting pitcher and open the wallet for a positional player, probably a shortstop between one of those two guys. I would expect out of those two names, one is playing shortstop for the Phillies on opening day, though I'm not sure who. I'm texting one of my college friends from Massachusetts. Do you think the Sox will keep Xander?
I'm interested, and I'm interested to see if he thinks that is a good or move or not.
I don't know.
Guy's a good ball player. I mean, listen, no matter what, again, I'm with my friend who said that, like any of those four guys, they're all star caliber shortstops, all four of them. So if you get any of those guys, you're giving, it's a huge upgrade because you're basically the bat, you're replacing the bat with instead of Segura, right? Like any of those guys, that's basically they're replacing Segura in the lineup.
Yeah.
And then with respect to Stott, who I think showed he can play a capable shortstop. Any of those guys defensively, I would have to imagine is also an upgrade. Yeah. Over Bryson Stott. So, yeah, but I am with you with the pitching. I still like. Can we be greedy? Can we say like I want?
The fuck not? Why? I mean, they just said, what if they just signed Rodon and Trey Turner, and they're like, we don't give a fuck about the luxury tax.
Yes.
Why not?
That's the dream offseason.
Is to just to go Steinbrenner mode and not give an F about anything.
That's exactly what I phrased it. Steinbrenner.
And that's exactly what I would want from a baseball team's owner. There's luxury tax, but there ain't no salary cap.
Correct. Spend. But I'm with you in this sense. Like if it's a situation where you can get Turner for X, but then the starting pitching upgrade won't be as big. But if you sign Bogarts and you can get like a Rodon, then I'm
doing that. Yeah.
I'd right. That, I'm sure. With you on that. Like that's, with that said, yeah, like I will jump up and down. I will have my Trey Turner jersey pre-ordered most likely if they sign him. I mean, he's a hell of a player and will help this team immediately. Put some speed at the top of the order. Hits the hell out of the ball, plays a good shortstop. I mean, there's limitless to what this guy can do and help your offense and provide. You probably put him in, I guess you put him in the two hole, and you'd move Rhys Hoskins down it towards the bottom of the order, which actually, if you have a guy like Rhys Hoskins hitting like seventh or eighth,
maybe hit him 10th.
Hit him in like Chicago or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Minnesota Twins, come on down.
We talked about that before. I don't know. I don't know what you would get for him. Is probably not worth moving him.
Correct.
Because
you're selling at his, I guess what you would say is nadir. It's the worst possible time to sell on him. And because of the upside he presents, because of the highs you've seen him have in the past, it really doesn't make sense, because I don't think they're adequately going to find production there at first base that replicates his raw numbers and rate stats, even though the highs and lows are maddening to the fan base. And unless he wins a World Series in Philadelphia, he'll never live down that World Series performance, you know, that four strikeout game.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure they can do better at first base while making the necessary upgrades in the rotation and the middle infield.
What hurts is that he's a DH, right? Like that's what hurts, is he's a DH on a team that already has
seven DHs.
Right. Like, and Bryce Harper had to be a DH last year. And not only that, you kind of need the DH spot because Bryce Harper ain't getting any younger and you're going to want to use him as a DH.
I don't know if Bryce would you play Bryce in the field again?
I would, only because he's better than Castellanos or Schwarber. Like
I almost wonder if they're better off just making him a full-time DH, minimizing any injury risk. Yeah. Maybe that changes. I don't know shit about shit in terms of medical and injury stuff, but
yeah.
Does that change what he needs to do in terms of off-season recovery and surgery? Does that play a factor? And I'm sure Bryce
maybe
wants to play the field. If he seems like a gamer, a guy who loves doing that.
That's what I was
That's
gonna
not
say,
gonna man. Happen. But the DH situation sucks because Schwarber's a DH, Castellanos is a DH. You'd ideally like Real Muto DH more to get him off, because he caught more games than anyone in baseball last year, and he's not getting any younger, and he has that deal. He has, what, like four years left on that deal? Something. And then he's catching in the World Baseball Classic in March. That guy's got innings on him. He should play DH more because you can't miss his bat in the lineup. Having a lot of good hitters is a good problem to have.
Sure.
But the pieces aren't seamless fits.
Yes. But I do like your optimal outfield defense is Harper and right, Castellanos and left. That's your optimal. Yeah. And then obviously Marsh and center. That's your optimal outfield defense. And then first base, and Schwarber's as a DH is your best bet. The other thing is too, like, I don't know. And Schwarber's a guy who maybe you don't want playing in the field because he's not very good in the field. And I think he would even admit that. And he was also a little dinged up to end the season, right? He had that knee he was fighting all season long. And I'm sure playing left field every day probably didn't help that when you were going into the season expecting him to DH. I've seen some people speculate, oh, maybe, you throw him at first base. I think he's played like 20 career games.
If you
first
think
base,
Rhys Hoskins sucks at exactly first base right. in the field, get a load of Kyle Schwarber playing first base.
Yeah, like you don't – that he's a DH, and a DH among a team of DHs. And then Boehm, who took some strides and looked at times very good and at times serviceable.
His bat isn't enough to play him at first base. There's this speculation. Yeah. What if they move Boehm the first base and sure. maybe move Stock to third or second, blah, blah, blah. Like, maybe he wins a glove at first base, but he does not hit what you need from a first baseman in that lineup.
I'll say this. I think Boehm, and I know the guy who's been banging the drum on that is Ruben Amaro, keeps saying like he's gonna he's going to hit home runs, like, eventually. Like, he's just, he makes too much contact. He's too big. He's going to get stronger. Like, eventually,
I mean, your power doesn't really get there in baseball if you look at, like, historic numbers to, like, 26, 27, 28. Yeah.
Right. So, a lot of these doubles, you know, are going to turn into home runs. Like, these balls that he smokes into the gap are, he's going to get a little bit more lift on them, and they're going to leave the ballpark. I mean, that's just naturally going to happen probably as he gets older and gets stronger. He's so big, right? Like, he's such a big dude. Like, it's going to happen. Like, so I'll say that. I do think his bat is going to add some power to it. And I think he's got a chance to hit 300 over a course of a season. I think he's that good of a contact hitter too, but
we have some
get back to you.
Yes.
Okay. Go
live on the podcast. First text, no, they're cheap as fuck. Second text, they signed Story last year, so they wouldn't need to sign a homegrown player who's been one of the best shortstops in baseball for the past 5 years. It really adds up, and I'm sure there's a sarcastic tone, and really adds up.
Yeah. So, in other words, he thinks if the Phillies were to sign Xander Bogaerts, it would be a good move.
I would think so.
Yeah, okay.
It's good to have good players. That. People forget that.
Yeah, no, hey, yeah. But we talked about the outfield defense. Brandon Marsh came in, kind of solidified the center field spot, which was up and down all season long. Dombrowski, really, it was a years-long issue when you had to keep trotting out Odubel Herrera, which, oh, thank God, oh, it's RIP Bozo.
Every time Marsh made a great play during the playoffs, I was like, yeah, that would have went off Odubel's, like, ankle and would have been an inside-the-park home run.
Oh, I know. But the other thing is, too, one of the things that I kept a close eye on, knowing that situation, knowing that the Phillies didn't have a strong center field situation, was they had a guy named Johan Rojas in the minors who was going up through the ranks. And they said the big thing with him was glove. He's a hell of a fielder and speed. He's going to steal some bases. The hit tool is perhaps behind and maybe might not have, you know, might have a little bit of power. Probably the power might actually outweigh the bat at some point. But I mentioned him because they added him to the 40-man roster today. Had to do it because you're not going to let one of your prospects go in the Rule 5 year. I think he's only 20 years old. He's a young guy, and he's at a double A last year.
Turned 22 in August.
Okay, so maybe a little older than I thought. But still, 22 that's years fine. Old. Yeah, I mean, that's still right in
you,
line.
You could. He's a righty. Marsh is a lefty. You could platoon them.
That's true, too. The other thing I was thinking is you just talked about.
Wouldn't you rather do that than Matt friggin' Beerling?
Well, of course. I thought Matt Beerling was actually going to help them this year, and he just did not have a good season. I thought he showed a little bit of potential at the end of last year, and you know the whole.
I agree.
The whole exit velo thing, I do buy. Like, if a guy is hitting baseballs hard, eventually that's going to lead to hits. But by the second half of the year, or not even. I mean, he started off really slow, came back and was okay, and then just really was not very good from the end of the season and through the postseason. But so I wouldn't mind to see him getting another shot at being like the fourth or fifth outfielder next year. But I would like some competition too for that. But that, with all that said, you talked about the idea of trading, you know, making a trade for pitching. Could Rojas be a guy that's dangled? You know, I don't know how he is viewed among baseball. He's clearly not a top 100 guy or anything, but
yeah.
For a team that like the Phillies, who was looking for a defensive minded first center fielder, the Phillies wanted someone who was a little bit farther along, obviously, in Marsh. And I think I'm actually excited to see his potential with the backs. I think he's still got a little bit more that's untapped there. And I think a full offseason,
I wouldn't mind playing him every day, regardless of the platooning. Because
I'm with you.
I thought this yesterday, we're recording Tuesday. The rookie of the year stuff came out for the respective leagues. And I'm like, look at the Braves. They always have guys in the top. They have like multiple guys in the top three. And they let those guys play every day. They let those guys get in the groove. They let those guys figure it out. And there's when you're trying to win games, you're trying to make the playoffs, different things happen. But I think there's legitimacy to letting your young guys play it out. And I wish there's times where they had played Edmundo Sosa and Matt Vierling in the playoffs doing that, a little platoon shift. But then at the same time, thinking like, these are the reps Stott and Marsh need to progress to legitimate everyday players that are key cogs, not just maybe this postseason. Because maybe they figure it out in the next week during this run. And if not, maybe they're doing it the entirety of next season and hopefully for them into next year's playoffs. So I like the, like, again, office strategy. If manager wants to go all platoon and do stuff like that, look at splits, take an analytical approach. But I think there's something to be said of the human element always. Something that I think, you know, as guys like, we're probably similar, we're always kind of these
forward-thinking, progressive, you know, minds. This goes beyond baseball, basketball, football. But I think that that movement, which I definitely was a huge part of at times, underrates the human element of not just, you know, development, but the overall just approach to playing professional sports.
I'm glad you brought up the human element too, because with Marsh, I don't know how much you know about his story, but like, that guy went through a lot, man.
Yeah.
Lost his dad. Then, like, I think it was like within like a month, lost like his best friend growing up. I'm sure that took a huge toll on him, and it affected his play at times. Like, how could it not? You're a human being and those things happen. And he struggled with the bat mightily with the Angels, and his swing got very big and very long. And they corrected that a little bit with the Phillies, but like, you can only do so much in a season, right? So that's why I'm like really interested to see, you know, with Kevin Long, who I think they extended Kevin Long, right? The Phillies.
They did. The entire coaching staff is back.
Yeah. Love it. He obviously did a tremendous job with this team, and Stott being one of the guys he worked with, and Marsh another, of on just shortening their swings and shortening their approaches. And it worked out very well. And with more time with Kevin Long, more time this offseason, where he's in clearly going to be in a much better place mentally. He knows he's here, right? He got traded to a team that clearly wants him, a winning team that went to the World Series, that he got that taste of the postseason. I'm really intrigued to see what he does and to see kind of how he develops. What I'm not intrigued about is the Philadelphia Flyers. There's a transition for you. The Flyers had a absolute shit week. Get crushed by the Columbus Blue Jackets. Johnny Gaudreau, South Jersey native, who was a free agent.
Who may have wanted to play for the Flyers.
Strong indications are he wanted to be a Philadelphia Flyer. But there he is, scoring goals for Columbus. Then John Tortorella. I don't know if you saw this. You probably did. He ducks his post-game availability in Columbus.
I did see that.
With no reasoning. Now, listen, Doc Rivers missed a post-game availability as well, but it was a personal reason. It was a personal matter. That's fine. You squash it, right? As a media member, all right, he had a personal thing. You squash it. You move on.
Yeah.
When the coach gives no indication as to why they're doing that, and then the next time, the next game, it gets brought up and he gets pissed off about it. What do we like? What bothered me too, and I don't want to do the whole soapbox. Oh, media, hoity-toity thing. But like, a couple of reasons why that sucked. One, I think only two writers actually traveled. I think it was the Olivia and Gia, who cover the Flyers for the Inquirer, traveled to Columbus. There were two reporters you had to face, and you ducked them both.
They're could have taken you at max 4 or 5 minutes to talk to them.
Even if you went out there and got pissed off and gave them something, at least they had a quote. If you got pissed off, you might have given them a great quote, something they could use. They're trying to do their jobs, and that's just shitty. Frankly, it just is. It's shitty to do that. I've heard some stuff behind the scenes that supposedly a writer complained to the Hockey Writers Association about Tortorella. It's a whole thing. It's a pissing match. It's stupid. And then on top of that,
we could have foreseen these things happening with John Tortorella as your head coach.
And on top of that, they get their asses kicked on Saturday with Claude Giroux back in the house, which
two assists from the Gaudreau thing happens, the Johnny Hockey thing, and then Giroux comes back, has I think he had two assists, right?
I actually didn't watch a second of that game because of the party, but I just watched the Giroux stuff because I miss him dearly, and I love Claude Giroux. And then Sunday, ass kicked again, 5-1 by the Stars. It's, I think you were on it more than I was, because when we talked about the benchings early on, and you said how you felt like this stuff's going to grate on people, you know, whether it's
it wears it's the thin players, when the team's but, not if you're winning, Hardo rah rah coaches stuff is fine. You saw different times like. Everyone bought into Chip Kelly in 2013. No one bought into him in 2015. And it's just a 3-week span we're doing. It's not a 3-year span that I don't like being like, oh, well, I'm glad I'm right. Like, I don't really give a fuck if I'm right or not. I'm wrong more often than not.
Most of us are.
Yeah. And if I did that, I wouldn't be a media member. I'd be working for a team, right?
Yeah.
And
or placing a lot of money on bets and winning a lot.
One of those things. That's not really my forte.
No, neither.
But it just seemed like this was going to happen. How could you not see this happening? This was the most Flyers move to hire him, the most Flyers-ass roster you could have. And you had this little spark that may have captured the fan base's imagination, had some nice wins, had some wins where they were playing well in all phases of the game. And then shit like this happens. And I don't know. I thought potentially maybe this is a year they stay in the playoffs, and you never know what happens there. It's hockey. It's different. And that didn't necessarily mean they're going to be a contender 2 years from now. They could be freaking terrible next year if they make the playoffs this year. But sinking ship vibes.
Man.
It's November. It's
and I'm just like, I'm never going to get over them not signing Gaudreau. Because here's – so for me
– doesn't that seem like a Flyers thing, though? Like, I don't get that aspect. Like, and I mean this in a positive way. Like, maybe you're back-ass thinking of, like, this idea you have of how to construct a team would have been better. Because you'd be like, this guy's, like, from here, South Jersey. He wants to be a effing Flyer. You want to be an effing Flyer? Like, let's get the fan base. Let's sell some tickets. Like, I thought that would have been their MO. And maybe there are other reasons, you know, issues that came up with him not coming here, not wanting to come here, wanting to come here, whatever. But whatever philosophy you had, it seemed obvious to bring this guy in.
Just a no brainer of no. And I'll lay it out for me. Free agency comes. I didn't like anything they did prior to free agency. I didn't like the Tortorella hire. My thing was, all right, if you sign Gaudreau, I don't want to say I'm all in, but I'm excited about that. Right? Like I'm not kidding. I was looking, I'm like, all right, how much do Flyers jerseys run these days? I'm going to get myself and Miles matching Johnny Gaudreau jerseys. That's how excited I was for that possibility. Then not only do they not do that, then they trade and sign Tony DeAngelo. And it's it didn't feel real. It felt like I was being
Let's do
mocked.
The complete opposite of what they should have done. The story
wrong
of the modern Flyers.
Jersey. Wrong South Jersey player. I will never get over it. I'm not exaggerating when I say that. I will, as a Flyers fan, I will never get over Johnny Gaudreau being a Columbus Blue Jacket and not being a Philadelphia Flyer. You're going to tell me, Chuck Fletcher, you couldn't figure out a way to move James Van Riemsdyk's money. Teams are moving players left and right. Bad contracts. They're finding a way to do it. And you couldn't.
Those are probably better run teams. I think that's the issue with that.
That's kind of what I'm getting at there. but it's just
the issue there is everything else. Just the farther you go up the ladder, chaos is a ladder, the more chaotic it goes with this organization.
Oh my God. And it's just it's hard. It's hard to want, like, for me, for with the Flyers. And I know you and I have talked about this, and like for me, in like the like 2010-ish era of my life, I could reasonably say that I liked all four, like watching all four sports teams pretty much equally. And that's not an exaggeration. Yeah. Like I got just as excited for the Flyers going to the Stanley Cup as I did, you know, the Phillies making another playoff run or, you know, the Eagles making the playoffs. Like I literally got just as excited for those things. I want to be excited about the Flyers. I want to root for the Flyers, but I don't. I am so apathetic. Like I'm pissed off about Gaudreau. Like I'm never going to not be pissed off about that. But the team in general, I'm so apathetic. And I have a perfect symbolism thing for you. The other night, I guess it was after Embiid's performance. So Embiid has this ridiculous night. He's great. He's amazing. Walking out of the arena as I often do with my good pal, Noah Levick from NBC Sports Philly. We're walking out together. Chatting over the game, talking about, you know, just kind of like the vibes and all that. And it's like, again, just so the vibes were so good. It was such a cool thing to be a part of. We're walking by the team shop store. You know what I'm talking about right there? Kind of like right by the team shop store right there. And there's like a little, like a booth or something like that. And it's like a customization thing. So I guess, you know, that you bring it to this booth and they can give you a custom jersey, whatever. Or you order one. I don't know how it works. But you look at the banner on the front and it's, you know, the Flyers and the Sixers logos. Have Joel Embiid on one side. On the other side, you have Rasmus Ristolainen. Does that not say it all?
Can't argue with you.
It's insane. I got way more passionate about that than I thought I was going to get. But,
good. We needed it. I liked it. Because Flyers inevitably are kind of the fourth peg in our podcast.
Sure.
And perhaps that changes in the future. But I liked it.
If they keep doing this shit, then no, they're going to stay right where they are. And the Union might surpass them soon enough. If you and I both.
We should discussed that last week, right? Yeah. That the Union probably would have been in a position that kind of.
Yeah. We should we should plan an outing next year. You and I go to a Union game.
That'd be sick.
The Thirsty Dogs Drink Faster podcast goes to a Union game. I think that could be a thing. And we could turn it into something. We could turn it like we could make it so like, hey, Union fans, like, you know, I'm sure, you know, you wish we talked more soccer on our pod and we, you know, more Union. All right. Well, we're going to bring it to you. Like, talk to us. Right.
I love it.
I think we're going to talk to some people.
$1 million idea.
Well. we're probably gonna have to spend the money to it, but no. But yeah,
yeah.
Wrapping up on that note. Oh man, anything else you wanted to add? Anything about anything Eagles wise? Or I mean, I guess we didn't really touch on next week or how you kind of think the Flyers go.
I hope Nick Foles is active on Sunday.
Wow,
this is the first time they will have faced Foles.
Right.
Damn, what if he was fucking playing? That would be sick. from a media standpoint, they would have had to send me. I think
it's a Content Central. Good lord.
It's a shame.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll see some nice pics of him and some players or stuff like that.
I still can't believe Jeff Saturday is their head coach and he won a game.
I still can't believe Nick Foles has a Super Bowl MVP to his name.
I can. He's a goat.
I meant that in a good way, obviously.
Yeah, I know. All right, well, that's going to do it for this edition of the Thirsty Dogs Drink Faster podcast. For Seamus Clancy, I'm Paul Hudrick. Please rate, download, subscribe wherever you get your podcast, and we will talk to you all next time.